This episode is sponsored by Feather Snack. Okay, hold on, y'all. I have to tell you about something that my wife got us into and that my whole family is loving now. Brace yourselves. It's the Feather Snap Scout Smart Bird Feeder. Yes, I said bird feeder. This thing is so cool, and it offers a brand new way to connect with nature and learn about the birds right in your own backyard. Or, if you're like us, living in New York City, it's in your friend's backyard in the country, and you get to use the app connected to it to learn all the stuff. It's got this high-resolution camera that connects to an app, so you can check out a live stream from your feeder. You can take photos and videos of the birds that visit. You can ID the species using expert-trained AI, and you can earn badges along the way. You can even, y'all, learn fun facts about hundreds of species. For example, did you know that American crows can recognize and remember people's faces? And they can even teach their young who's a friend and who's a foe? I know that now, did you? Seriously, the Feather Snap Feeder is entertaining, it's educational, and it's just a whole bunch of fun for the whole family. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com. All right, y'all. I just want to take a quick second to talk about our sponsor, Sunbasket. I don't know if you know this about me, but I am not a big fan of grocery shopping or meal planning or anything that goes along with any of that. But I do very much care about eating healthy. But when you don't like to grocery shop or plan meals, it is really hard to cook healthy dinners for your family. And that's where Sunbasket comes in. They're a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your door. Each week, you can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy meal kit recipes with a wide variety of dietary options, plus dozens of snacks, salads, breakfast items, and more. And you can pick and choose from recipe options like vegetarian, Mediterranean, carb conscious, the list goes on. We just had orzo bowls with broccoli, sun-dried tomatoes, and pea stew, and it was delicious. My kids even liked them. I can't speak to Sunbasket more. I love them. Thanks to Sunbasket's commitments to clean ingredients and organic fresh produce, there's no easier way to eat your very, very best. You just have to go to sunbasket.com/queerfam today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/queerfam to save $120, y'all, across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. Go do that. Get some healthy food. There you go. Hey folks, are you in NYC for Pride? You need to come see a live taping of If These Ovaries Could Talk, If So. This show is in partnership with WNYC at the Green Space, and the special guest is stand-up comic Jessica Kirsten. She is amazing. You need to see this. The show is on June 10th at 7 p.m. For tickets, go to ovariestalk.com and click the live events button.
Oh my God. Welcome to If These Ovaries Could Talk.
Hi, I'm Jamie.
I'm Robin. And it's been that kind of a day.
It has. And we're your hosts.
Yeah.
I don't know why I have to say
you
that.
You don't, Jamie. You don't.
It's like a habit.
Well,
now.
I'm going to say we're your hosts with shoulders up by our ears because we're both very stressed out today.
It's been one of those days. Yeah. Not because of the podcast.
No,
actually.
Just like life.
Life. Ugh. We're moms.
Right, fuck it.
Who work.
Someone in a meeting today, Jamie and I had, somebody was like, hey, are you guys building in time for like yourselves? And we were like, that's hilarious. Shut up.
We're moms.
Like, no, of course we're not. And there'll be no better time for us to do this project than right now because this is how it is.
No. Also, if we weren't building it in, like, even if we're building it in, for, it just
wrecked.
Doesn't,
somebody
it
ruins
doesn't
it.
Exist.
Some kid ruins it. And they don't mean to. They're lovely.
Oh,
this is how I knew I was stressed before I even left the door. My daughter goes, you know, Mom, I'm going to have a great day at school today. You know, I'm going to have a good day. And I was like, okay, I hear you. I was like, I can reset. I'm resetting. I was like, I'm resetting.
Wow.
Right now.
She's the one resetting.
And by the way,
she's the one
she
dropping
me.
Dropping yeah. things for yeah. you.
And meanwhile,
that's what I try to do.
At the same exact time, I was holding hands with my kids and my son goes, why are we running?
Been there. But meanwhile, in my land this morning, there has been a sweater that we bought once. She loved it. She lost it 2 days later. We bought it again.
No.
She lost it again.
No.
This is the third time we have this sweater. She put it on this morning. We just got it. She puts it on.
there's no zipper on the damn sweater. Like, it's got the zipper, oh, but it doesn't have the zip thing.
Oh, no.
So, of course, my five-year-old freaks the fuck out.
Oh, no.
And then there's an epic meltdown.
Because there's no fucking zipper.
Because there's no fucking zipper on, like, her favorite
damn it, Amazon,
sweater.
Are you trying to hurt my soul?
Oh, I was going to kill Amazon. Yeah. I was going to kill. And then the baby starts crying because he's scared of her crazy scream.
There's no zipper?
Oh, it was a rough. Oh, God.
Love it.
Yeah.
Listen.
Oh, anyway.
Speaking of love, this week on June 1st starts Pride Month.
I know.
In New York, it's World Pride Month.
World Pride Month. Ooh,
and
you know,
it's the 50th anniversary of Stonewall.
I know. Also, I mean, that's something we should talk about. But I also just saw online that their Virgin Atlantic, I think, is doing an all gay staffed flight from the UK to New York for World Pride.
Oh, I love
and
that.
And Tytus Burgess is like leading.
Oh my God.
Leading the crew. And they're going to have like a Judy Garland sing along on the plane.
Of course they are.
You have to buy like these special tickets. But that's fun.
Because by the way, they're going to gouge you for Pride.
Oh yeah, totally.
But the way Jamie and I were talking about like what our experiences are with Pride. And it's so funny to me because it's just like, I remember going to the parade when there was maybe the Altoids float, but there was like no politicians. And you were just wanted to see the Altoids float because it was like men like with really killer bodies.
I didn't want to see the Altoids float.
I did. I was like, look at the go-go dancers. They were so pretty.
Oh my God.
I mean, I don't want to do anything with them and I want to see them. But there was no corporate sponsors and there wasn't politicians kicking it off. And it was just like Dykes on Bikes and then the S&M section, which I fucking love.
Anyway,
get to our guest for today. Kim Bergman.
Kim Bergman.
She is like runs this agency called Growing Generations. Mm-hmm. And it's a surrogacy. It's like a soup to nuts family building place where they help you get surrogates, the egg donor. They kind of line everything up.
They help all people who are going through trying
not
to
just
make
the
gay babies,
but other people too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Straights
this,
too.
Yeah. The straights too. Whatever.
The straights too. We can go there too.
Whatever. Fine for you.
So she's got this cool agency and she's a professional.
She's a
mental professional.
Got a new book
as
coming
well
out
with this. Yes.
We're going to talk about. Yeah. She was a therapist. She's like, she got all the things.
Yeah. I think we're going to get more therapy.
Oh, can we get some more therapy for my shoulders?
I don't think it's that kind of therapy. Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah,
I get it.
Shoulders.
Not it. Like a massage, because that's not the kind of therapist she is.
Whoa, anyway. Whoa, Jamie. No,
I don't know. You're talking S&M. You're talking therapy. Wow.
Marian, I don't know what she's thinking
right now. We need to get Kim Bergman in here so you guys can stop listening to us, because we are not making sense. Kim, come here.
My God, welcome.
Hi, Kim.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
The pleasure is ours, coming.
Oh. We have Kim Bergman here.
So, you know, we start with the elevator pitch with everybody, and I'm really curious of your elevator pitch.
Mm-hmm. Who are you, Kim Bergman, PhD?
Well, I am Kim Bergman. Mm-hmm. I'm a licensed psychologist, and I'm also a mom. I have a wife of 36 years in October.
Congratulations.
We haven't been married that long. We couldn't be. We've actually been married 3 times. If we have time, I'll tell you that story. It's pretty funny. And we have 2 daughters who are 20 and 23. We had them through assisted reproduction back when it wasn't really a roadmapped thing. And so we kind of pioneered and figured it out. And I have been helping gay men, infertile couples, single people, anybody who needs help have babies through third-party assisted reproduction for the last about 25 years.
There's so much in there, Jamie.
So much. I mean, first of all, I want to know how you've been married 3 times.
Okay,
I'll
tell you. So we were married on our 10th anniversary, but it wasn't legal anywhere. So we
were commitment ceremony?
Well, no, we actually had a full wedding with a chuppah and a rabbi and everything, but it wasn't official.
Mm-hmm.
And then
that's like my wedding.
So then 10 years later, we were on a cruise in Canada and our kids were with us. At that point, they would have been about 5 and 8 or something.
Mm-hmm.
And we got married in Victoria, Canada, because legal in Canada.
Mm-hmm. And Victoria's
and
so
it was
beautiful.
Recognized in the United States when you did that, right?
It was not.
Okay.
Enter marriage number 3.
So it was just sort of like, we're just going to do this.
So we got married in Canada and it was legal in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was kind of debatable whether it was accepted and legal or not. Some people said yes. Some people said no.
Mm.
Right. But when
welcome to gay marriage.
Exactly. And we're in California, so Prop 8 passed. Uh-huh. And before it passed, and there was that little window where you could get married, we couldn't because we were technically already married, even though federally we weren't. Yes, it was kind of a mess.
What?
So then on our 30th anniversary, which would have been now 6 years ago, we had a big 30th anniversary party. And it also happened to be we both turned 50 and I was 15 years cancer free.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. So we had a big, huge party in our backyard with all of our friends and we surprised them with a real actual wedding because DOMA had just been overturned. Oh. So defense of marriage had been overturned. So we were actually legal. So we married three times.
That's great. I mean, weddings are fun anyway. Well, especially gay weddings.
If you ever have the chance to make a surprise wedding, nothing tops it.
Oh, because everybody was like, what?
No, everybody was there just having a party, having hors d'oeuvres, having a drink. And then all of a sudden, like wedding music. And our officiant.
You didn't tell anybody when they came in. You just all of a sudden
surprised.
Yes. We had a party.
That's a surprise within a surprise. Yeah.
We were just having a party.
I thought when they got there, Jamie.
The only people who knew were the officiant. Our two daughters and our little niece who's a flower girl.
Oh. A reality TV show.
It was like
all the
crazy.
People being like, what?
Yeah. My daughter keeps asking, when am I going to be in a wedding? When am I going to be in a wedding? I'm like, well, you don't even like to wear a dress.
When you're 35. How about that?
Yeah. It was really, really cool.
That's fun. Really
cool. Congratulations three times.
Exactly.
And so tell us about your kids. How'd you have your kids?
Yes.
We used an anonymous sperm donor who is actually an open identity donor. So that means that he's available to meet the kids when they turn 18.
Okay.
Which they both are over 18 and neither one of them wants to meet him.
Oh,
but
really?
That's another story.
Through a sperm bank?
Yes. Through a
different back then, right?
Yes. It was sort of different. We kind of went with the lesbian underground sperm. I don't advise it today, and nor is it necessary.
I didn't even know that exists.
But then how could it be an open ID if it was like an underground thingy?
Because it was basically like a sperm broker.
Shut up. It was like the black market of sperm?
It kind of was.
Wow.
It kind of was.
Okay. I did not even know that was like a thing.
It's a
renegades.
Thing. But when I tell this story, which for a long time I didn't tell in my business because it's so completely not advised to do it that way. So now I've decided, okay, I'm comfortable sharing the story as a bit of history as long as I always put in, do not do it that way. Terrible idea. And it actually doesn't protect you legally because we did a home insemination, which doesn't protect you, doesn't give you the automatic protection when you use a sperm bank or a doctor. So we totally rogue, but it was because we weren't getting pregnant. We tried for 18 months from a sperm bank and it wasn't working.
At home insemination?
No, with frozen sperm at a doctor, but
really?
There weren't a lot of doctors that would help us. So we were using kind of not a reproductive endocrinologist, so not a specialist.
It's like an OB.
Yes. And you really need a specialist to help you get pregnant.
Right.
Yeah. The timing is so specific in the way they monitor you.
So 18 months, it didn't work. So that's why we went to the lesbian.
18
months.
Did you start to lose hope?
You know, here's the thing. You would think I would, but I didn't because I always knew I was going to be a mom.
Kim,
it was like the thing I wanted more than anything else in the world. So I can remember though to this day, and this would be like 25 years ago, the very first insemination. The very first. Yeah. And thinking, oh, I'm pregnant.
Right.
Like I did an insemination. Yeah. I'm pregnant.
Totally.
Like, of course I'm pregnant. Like,
yeah, I thought that too.
Of course.
I was though.
I wasn't.
I wasn't sure
that I was because it never even dawned on me that I wouldn't get pregnant right away.
Right.
Well, because I always say, because you've spent your whole life being told like, just don't even like open your legs because you're going to accidentally get pregnant. And then so like you, and to me, like not having really been with dudes, like if they're putting it right there scientifically, I was like, why wouldn't it work?
Right.
Right.
That's how I felt. I mean, I literally can go right back there. It was Halloween week. We did the insemination. We went to a party and I just remember feeling like I'm pregnant. And I wasn't pregnant for another 18 months.
It's interesting you saying you didn't lose hope because you just always knew it was going to happen.
Yeah.
I feel the same way. It took me 2.5 years with unexplained infertility. Mm-hmm. And I never lost hope either, like so many people talk about, really.
Yeah.
Until the very, very end.
You lost a lot of money, but not a lot of hope.
You know, I really did just keep going, but I was desperate. There were things I did that it's surprising that I did, you know, like just because I knew I was ovulating, it was like, wherever we are, I need the sperm, you know, that stuff really does happen. So we went to the underground because we were able to get fresh sperm. And that's why it's just like, it's so taboo. And I, and really, even when I think back, it was like 1995. Sperm couldn't really be tested the way it can now.
Or washed.
It wasn't.
Right.
Yeah. So we, yeah, we broke a lot of, they weren't rules, but we, you know.
Best practices.
Yes, we did not follow best practices.
So it's so interesting that you're on this path now.
Yeah.
But it's amazing.
Are you going to say?
I don't know what you're going to say. What are you going to say?
Well, I was going to say, we are doing this recurring segment with this couple, Tiff and Carissa, who are on the show early in the season. And then they're sending us, and they are just trying, just starting, and they're sending us voicemails.
Yeah.
And they just, a couple weeks ago, sent us a voice memo where they went from a bank to this, it sounds like an underground sort of hookup-y thing. And they interviewed the guy and I was just like, and the mother in me was just like, oh God.
Yeah.
I mean, but well, they seem really happy with their choice.
They do. I mean, it's no judgment.
No, and there's no judgment at all. And the thing about it is, it's what's interesting for me, understanding it from both perspectives, is I'm just in touch with how the desperation of wanting something so badly that you can't have without extra people helping.
And extra money.
Yes. And that is why, I mean, that is a lot of why I love what I do. And it's a lot of why I wrote the book, because I felt like it makes it accessible. It's still expensive because you still need third parties. You need other people. But if I could make it seem a little bit more straightforward, a little less complex and a little bit less mysterious.
You seem, and I have to say, like, you seem to be very in touch with all aspects of this, like so much more so than we are. We're still learning everything. But in your book, you're just so in touch with everything. And I love the way you described the fertility journey for somebody doing assisted reproduction, or what do you call it? ART. Mm-hmm. But you talk about how it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. And I just, like, for the Tiffany and Carissa's out there who are doing this segment, like, that's so important for them to hear right now. Like, you're just in a marathon. Oh, yeah.
And not only that, but like, so for myself, the 18 months of trying, but I've been doing this now for 25 years. And so I have a long view. I have clients whose kids are teenagers and I know what they went through to have them. And at the time it felt like this is never going to happen for me. And it happens. Mm-hmm. It happens if you don't give up. It happens if you keep going. It happens if, you know, sometimes you have to give up what you thought it was going to look like and grieve that, because, you know, for a gay couple, using a surrogate and an egg donor is kind of a plan A. For a heterosexual couple, that's not plan A. Yeah.
That's a hard plan to swallow.
It's definitely down the line plan. But if you can wrap your mind around the keeping your eye on the end goal of becoming a parent.
Yeah.
Well, but if you look at like a Tiff and Carissa, and then you look at you, and like I'm somewhere closer to Tiff and more in the middle-ish, you have all of this experience from all of these other people. And so you're sitting there with all this knowledge. And what I'm hearing and what we're hearing, all these people who are emailing us, is they're alone wherever they are. There's not books like your book. There's not things like our podcast before it started, and they don't know. Yeah. And so this idea, so Tiff and Carissa are making a decision in a vacuum.
Yeah.
Like that they may not, and you have seen all of the repercussions play out with your clients, with your life experience, with friends over years. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, that's what I hope by talking about these things that we're able to say to people, like maybe rethink that decision. I'm not talking to Tiff and Carissa, just whatever X,
in general,
Y, and Z,
you know,
you're a guide.
So that they don't do something that's not protecting them legally or.
Right.
You said something really touching to me in your book too. And I will stop talking about your book eventually, but.
You don't have to.
No, I know.
She's like, I got to sell books, lady. Keep going.
I know. Buy the book, guys. No, but you said that the baby you were meant to have comes to you, or you get your baby when you're meant to have it, something like that. Yep. And you had that beautiful story about the couple who lost.
Yes.
Ugh.
Yes. They're amazing. And they're a wonderful, wonderful couple and wonderful family. And they are my inspiration. But I have many other families like that. I mean, most stories have happy endings.
Yeah. To tell the viewers, it was a couple.
So it was a couple that had, they were pregnant. They had a surrogate, two men. They were pregnant with twins, a boy and a girl. And the boy, right before the surrogate gave birth, the doctor knew that something wasn't quite right.
Yeah.
And the little boy was born. They were both born and the little boy died. He didn't live. And his name was Gabriel. And the little girl who lived, her name was Olivia. So they were twins. So, you know, it was horrible.
Yeah,
it was horrible. Just horrible. And they came back a couple years later and they used frozen embryos that they'd had, and they had another little girl, and her name's Vivian. And they're, oh my gosh, they're like probably 13 and 16 now, something like that. And Vivian is this beacon for me, because when people have losses mm-hmm. or the story doesn't go the way they hoped, I opened up pictures of Vivian and this big smile, and I just think, you know, there she is. And mm-hmm. that's how the story works out. So it's not that I'm fatalistic, like it all works out in the end, you know, just hold right. on. It's not like that. I don't believe that. I think we have to take a lot of action to have what we want and really put a stake in the ground. But
it's like the soul that's supposed to be with you comes to you.
Yes. And I just have seen it so many times. People losing a baby or just having a struggle. I mean, I myself had an experience in this realm. So one thing I didn't mention is, so I had our first child and my wife, we were gearing up to have our second, and I had always wanted to be pregnant. I had always wanted to be a mom. My wife was much slower to come to that. Mm-hmm. So when we were gearing up to have our second child, she just says kind of off the cuff, like, maybe I want to be pregnant. And I was like, oh man.
Kim, that happened to me. And the same exact thing.
And the thing is, I was like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm not really done being pregnant, but I cannot deprive her of it because right. it's so amazing.
Right.
So, like, okay. So we used the same donor and she carried our second child. And then when our kids were 3 and 6, we decided to have a third. And I was going to carry because I was like, I'm not done. I really want to be pregnant again. So we did about 6 inseminations and it wasn't working. And at that point, I was already really working in this field. And I had a lot of good friends that were IVF doctors. And one in particular said, like, I'm just going to do IVF for you. Let's just get cut to the chase.
Yeah.
And I was older at that point, you know, than when I had carried our first daughter. So we started an IVF cycle and he said, and I was 39, and he said, go have a mammogram. And he said, I have no idea why I sent you for a mammogram, because you were 39 and I don't actually send people for mammograms as part of—
I was going to say, yeah.
It's not standard. He was like, I don't know why. I just had a feeling. So I had a mammogram in between patients. You know, you never forget this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Reading a trashy novel. And I go at my lunch hour because I'm so laissez-faire about it. I'm like, mammogram, shmammogram. Right. You know, yeah. It's not going to do anything. And, you know, they take the picture and they go, please wait. And then they come back and they go, we need another view. I'm like, sure, whatever.
Which, by the way, happens all the time.
All the time.
I'm always going back that second time.
So then
time.
They're like, we need another view. And I was like, this is kind of fishy. And then we're going to do an ultrasound. I was like, oh man, this isn't just fishy. So I was diagnosed with breast cancer actually on the day I was supposed to have IVF.
Oh.
So I had a dream that the third child was going to be a boy. I saw him really clearly. And so I feel like, I know this sounds really airy-fairy, and I am a psychologist,
we love that, by the way.
Of a scientist, but something made that doctor send me for a mammogram. Mm-hmm. And also my cancer, my particular cancer was very close to the chest wall, and it was estrogen and progesterone receptor positive. So what that means is, had I had the IVF and gotten pregnant, it would have been a really deadly cancer, and I wouldn't have known about it.
And you wouldn't have been able to do anything.
No. So having that third baby, the spirit of that third baby, whatever, you know, like, kind of saved my life. Wow. And of course I was like devastated because I wasn't going to have my third baby for about 30 seconds. And then I was like, Kim, get a grip, you know, like, you got two great kids and you're going to be fine. So I went with super aggressive treatment and, you know, like all of that.
Wow.
So,
wow.
But I do know that, like, that wish, you know, it's really, really compelling.
Yeah. Mm.
How did you transition from just being a person who's using ART to being a person who runs I saw this on your website, that really cool stat that you had, something like 1996, like, we've made 0 babies, like 2000, however many, it was like thousands of babies that you have helped make.
It was a total accident. So I was a lesbian mom and a lesbian psychologist, and I was treating a lot of lesbian clients who wanted to be parents, and we were all like kind of muddling through it together. So I had Abby, and that's my 23-year-old, and I had a friend who was a prominent attorney in LA, and he, a gay man, and he wanted to have a baby. And around the same time I was going through inseminations trying to get pregnant with Abby, he's also going around trying to, wanting to have a baby, but you know, he couldn't go do it yourself at home.
Yeah.
So he got turned down by many doctors, as did we, but still we were able to, you know, we, our home insemination, we had a friend who's a cardiologist and her wife who was a nurse. They did our insemination at home.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. What year was this?
95. 1995.
Jeez. And you got turned down. Yeah. What did that look like?
No.
Oh, no. We went to a doctor who said at the time, it's pretty racist what she said, but she said, go have sex with your gardener. They're really good at getting people pregnant. It was horrible.
Stop.
Yeah. Go pick someone up at a bar, have a one night stand, get pregnant. These are real.
Doctors said this to you.
Real doctors telling us this. Yeah.
And you were like, instead of you doing your job, yeah, exactly. I should go out and have sex at a bar.
Oh my
so
God.
This guy, this friend of mine, Will, he's on the same path, except he has to put more effort into it.
A little
it.
More so, complicated.
Yeah. So he finds a doctor who's willing to help him. He has an egg donor, he has a surrogate, and he has a baby. His daughter's 2 weeks older than Abby. And so he show up at places with this gorgeous little baby, and all these gay men in LA are like, wait a minute, how'd you do that? So I just said to him, hey, you know, if you ever see a role for me as a psychologist, if I can ever help. And I really meant like pro bono little advice here or there, because I had a really busy practice at the time. I'd be happy to help. And he called me 2 weeks later and he's like, were you serious? I said, well, yeah, I was totally serious. And he was like, well, I'm putting together this little company with another person. And do you want to help? And I'm like, sure. I don't even know what that looks like, but sure. And within about 3 or 4 or 5 years, I had to close my practice, and because it was just exploded, because everybody really, people wanted. And I remember when we were about 5 years old, the company, a heterosexual couple called us and they were like, we know you're the gay agency, but will you help? And we're like, well, of course we'll help you. We're not a gay agency. We'll help you. So that is how it happened. So it was like a total accident, and like the best accident that ever could have happened to me.
Wow.
So can you walk us through the process? Like I call you up, like how does that all work?
So you call me up, we do a consultation. So I walk you through the whole process, which is basically sort of nuts to bolts from the beginning to the end.
And when you say that means egg donor and surrogate? Yeah,
whatever you need.
Do the whole shebang.
We do the whole thing.
But no sperm donors.
We don't have them in house, but we will refer you to a reputable sperm bank, but whatever part you need. So some people come to us just for an egg donor and, you know, the intended mom can carry the baby, is planning to carry the baby. Some people come to us and they can make embryos, but they can't carry. Some people have a sperm factor or some other factor. Some people need an egg donor and a surrogate. Some heterosexual couples will use a husband's sperm. Some people need a sperm donor too. Mm-hmm. So whatever you need, we'll put it together, and we're a full service agency. So we put together the whole team. So basically, if you think about it, having a baby through third party assisted reproduction, it's like a giant collaborative effort with a whole bunch of people all coming together for one goal. Mm-hmm. Somebody becoming a mom or a dad, or mom and mom, or dad and dad, or whatever. So you have a doctor, a lawyer, insurance, psychologist, mm-hmm. surrogate, egg donor, sperm donor, travel agent. I mean, all these parts.
And you guys take care of all
we manage.
Put it all
so
together.
We
feels like you're like an agent.
We're kind of like a contractor is sort of how I feel. Like
the puzzle
together. Yes, we're putting the puzzle pieces together. We know what the laws are. We know
Project
what
manager.
Things. We know how what order things have to happen in so that you're protected legally. We know what has to happen medically so that you're complying with the FDA regulations. So we're following all of that, and we have sort of a guide with you the whole time, walking
That's great.
You through.
So you don't have any doctors in-house. You just have like a recommended list. So like when I get to that point, you could say this is a list of REs or...
Yes-ish. I mean, we have a group of reproductive endocrinologists that we like. But if you have one that you like, we work with them. We work with... There's no doctor we won't work with. If you come to us and you don't have one, we're going to send you to one of the ones we work with. Mostly because they're great people, they have great statistics, and they will work really seamlessly with us. So we have regular staff meetings with the nurses. We know we have just a really seamless process, and we can manage the process.
Do you make appointments for people, or do you just say, now it's your turn to do this?
Some of both. It just sort of depends. For some people, we will make every appointment. For the surrogates, we will make appointments. And for some people, we just remind them that they need to.
Depends on the
different
person.
Styles. Yeah. Some people really like to be involved.
I would want you to
involved.
Do everything for me.
Yeah. I'd probably do everything and, myself.
Yeah, and we have both of those, and we're used to both of those. And, you know, I mean, It's a stressful process. And as you mentioned earlier, it is a marathon, not a sprint. So we're in it for a really long time with people.
What's the average time from when someone comes to you, let's say a gay man or a gay couple, and to from consultation to, let's just say average?
18 months. And obviously that includes the 9 months, which is really 10 months.
You stay with them through the pregnancy as well.
All the way through 8 weeks postpartum.
Because you manage the surrogate.
Yes, because you manage all the OB care for the surrogate, and as well as legal and insurance for her while she's in the process. And support.
If a gay couple goes to you and gets the surrogate and they get pregnant with a surrogate.
Yeah.
Could it be possible that they could go through the entire pregnancy with like little contact with the surrogate? Does that happen sometimes?
Yeah. It's a real relationship. And at the beginning of the relationship, we match people based on their expectations. You know, some intended parents really do want a lot of involvement. They want to text and talk to their surrogate every day, go to every appointment. Some people really don't want that much involvement. And neither of those is right or wrong. There's really a bell curve. And both, you know, some people end up best of friends. For some people, it's very formal and more transactional. And the key is really making sure the surrogate and her husband or partner and the parents are all on the same page.
And that's where you come in, really. Mm-hmm.
So it might be like they might have a continued relationship forever. And then it's also equally possible. It might be just like, thank you, and we're done.
Yes, although I would say the vast majority stay in contact after the baby's
born.
Is
that like new, would you say? Or has that always been the case?
No, that's always been the case for us. I mean, there definitely are some parents who don't maintain a relationship afterward, and that's perfectly fine. The surrogate is fine with that. She knows that that's possible. Again, I would say some become the best of friends. Some never speak again, but most will be cordial friends, feel like sort of distant family.
Here's a holiday card.
Holiday card, birthday card, or maybe they become Facebook friends, which is, you know, something
good
relatively
way to keep
new.
In touch.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How do you find surrogates?
That is a great question. We don't find them. They find us.
Oh.
So we're not recruiting surrogates to come and be surrogates for us, because we don't want, surrogates are not just anybody who's had a baby before. You know, they have to really understand the mindset. They have to want it. So typically they will know someone who is a surrogate, or they know someone who had a surrogate, or they saw, you know, after school special about surrogacy when they were 12 and they've always wanted to do it. So what we do is make ourselves really easy to find. So if you want to be a surrogate and you Google surrogacy, you're going to find us. And and then we do about a 6-month screening, and about 2% of the women who apply will make it through our screening process.
Really? Because it's a very involved
super
screening.
Super rigorous screening.
And those are your standards, there's no federal standards?
So there's no federal standards, but there are standards put forth by the American Society for Reproductive Medicine, which is the governing body, and by governing, professional organization. All of the big agencies like us have the same.
So again, those are best practices. You're not required to, but
correct.
You should.
Yes. And most agencies that are our size and at our caliber, we all do a good job of screening surrogates.
So if you're looking for an agency, that's something you want to make sure this person is following. They're following the ART guidelines.
Yes. And as a matter of fact, surrogacy is not legal in New York. I'm sure you know.
Yes.
Right.
And we're...
Although isn't that supposed to be changing soon, possibly?
Well, hopefully this summer. We've been working really hard and lobbying. And one of the reasons that people don't want surrogacy to become legal is they want surrogates to have the right to change their mind. Because, you know, this is not like adoption where you do get a change your mind, period.
Yeah.
So I actually went to all of my friendly competition, all my colleagues. And we figured out that combined over the last 40 years of surrogacy, we had helped something like 50,000 people or more with never a surrogate changing her mind. Hmm. Not one. None of the big agencies. And I already knew that was going to be the answer. I just wanted their numbers.
Yeah.
But not one of the big agencies had a surrogate change her mind, because we're really committed to screening. So, mm-hmm. you know, when you make it through a screening process, you really want this. And what you want is to give the gift of parenthood to someone else, because you love being a parent so much, and because you love being pregnant and you had easy pregnancy, you want to give this gift. So surrogates really see themselves as, you know, babysitting your baby for 9 months. And then when it's big enough, handing it to you, not giving it to you, but giving it back to you.
Right. And surrogates, they're not using their own egg.
Yeah. Is there any state where that's legal?
It's legal wherever surrogacy is legal, but it's not done very often.
Because technically it's a gestational carrier.
Yeah. So what, correct? Everything that we're talking about is a gestational carrier with an embryo that's created by someone else, either an egg donor or the intended mom, IVF. Mm-hmm. But traditional surrogacy is where the surrogate is inseminated with the father's sperm and it's her own egg. But we don't do that and haven't done it for years.
And is that done? Very widely?
Rarely. I haven't heard of a case in a while.
Right.
I'm sure there's some kind of co-parenting type of situations where people do that. It's a less expensive choice because you're not doing IVF, but it's not without its own set of...
A minefield of...
Potential. I mean, I do know that... I know some families that have used traditional surrogates and it was fine. Everything went great. So it's not that it is... It's not that it's for sure a minefield, but potentially there's some issues. It's a little bit more fraught. Same as if you're using a family member, things are a bit more fraught.
Yeah.
Still, it works out, but you have to make sure you're not skipping any conversations or contracts or anything that's important.
A lot more to think about.
Mm-hmm. So can we talk, is it tacky? I feel like we're in New York, so you can do this to talk costs.
Yes, we can talk costs.
From like your portion to like we've gotten ballparks from couples, but it was just their experience.
Yeah.
Also, Gary and Tony from Gay Parents to Be did talk about the average cost, but
yeah, happy to. I mean, it's not taboo at all. It's a reality. And I wish it wasn't so expensive, but you know, there's a whole bunch of parts that need to be paid for. So the IVF, the lawyer, the insurance, the surrogate's compensation, which isn't, you know, surrogates, sidebar, surrogates are the reason that surrogates are paid is to make them whole. Because they are dealing with discomfort.
Yeah.
They're dealing with risk. They're dealing with, you know, their life being sort of dislocated or, you know, disrupted. So that's why they're paid.
Stretch marks.
Yeah, all of
labor.
That.
Labor.
And the risk.
Sure, so, risk too.
So if you have embryos, like you're able to create your own embryos, the surrogacy can be somewhere upwards of $120,000. If you need to make embryos with your own eggs, you know, that's about $15,000 to $20,000, and if you need to make embryos with an egg donor, that's about $50,000. So
on top of the 120
for the egg donor portion, yeah.
So you're looking at like a solid 170 if you need help from every single person.
Yes, and it can be more because if you don't get pregnant on the first try, you're going to have to pay for IVF again. Depending on what agency, like in our agency, you don't have to pay. We have one fee that carries you through the whole thing. And we also are the legal fee and the psych fee. Those are one-time fees, the insurance. So we have a lot of things that are set. So it doesn't become exponential.
Right.
But if you need to do IVF again, you're going to have to pay the doctor, the medication, the surrogate's travel, her lost wages. So it can add up.
How much does the surrogate make?
The surrogate's compensation is around from $25,000 to $50,000, depending on what agency, where she lives, if she's done it before. Certain risk factors will have her compensation be higher. For example, if she's carrying twins or if she's caring for an HIV positive couple, even though there's no risk, it's sort of psychological.
This is something I just learned. The washing takes away the HIV positive from the sperm. I just learned that from your book.
Yeah, so
many things in your book.
And so
I'm behind on the reading if you can't
tell.
Okay.
Hey, it's all right. Thank you. So the thing about helping HIV positive people, which is something I'm super proud of, having worked in the 80s with a lot of people dying of AIDS, which AIDS is not like that anymore. You know, there's a lot of great medications.
So different.
And it's so different. But what happened is that for many years, married couples where the husband was HIV positive were able to have their own biological children through IVF and sperm washing. So when we were faced with parents who were HIV positive who wanted to use their own sperm, we went to the, you know, best HIV doctors and we said, can you do this? And they said, yes. I mean, if there was a risk, we wouldn't do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And no doctor will ever say there's zero risk, but when they're not officially telling us, they'll say there's no risk. Mm-hmm. It's not risky because there's some things that the parents have to, you know, the dad has to have zero viral load, which we now can detect, which we couldn't a decade ago.
Yeah.
And then the sperm is washed, which is really almost just sort of a insurance policy. Mm-hmm. So there's a number of steps that have to be followed and not every surrogate's willing and that's fine. But so that's the compensation is
that sort of the range. It seems low to me. Like I hated being pregnant. $25,000 is not enough for me.
Well, it's not,
like 100 grand.
It is not enough and it's not about the money.
No, they're doing really, it because they want
to
help.
They want to help.
That's what you're screening for.
Yes.
That's who you're looking for.
That's what we're looking for. Surrogates are the most.
They wouldn't choose us.
Yeah, they really wouldn't, Jamie.
Well, surrogates are just the most loving, altruistic people around. I mean, that's
just like a type of person.
It's just it's a type of person. It's a type of person. They are so giving.
They're called the non-Jamie Robbins. technical term.
They are so giving, and they're just, you know, they're the kind of people who would sign up for like bone marrow registries, right. And you just know, they just really are. They really, really are. And it's hard in the abstract to really understand who surrogates are. But when you're, the minute you talk to a real life surrogate, and we kind of, in the surrogacy world, they sort of joke about being like unicorns, you know, like this mythical figure. But when you're sitting with someone who's going to be or has been a surrogate, it instantly makes sense. You talk to them and you're like, oh, okay, now I really understand.
You're one of those people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you know them well now because you've talked to so many.
They
of them,
are
so
the
you can spot
best.
Them a mile away. It's like Gaydar, but it's like surrogate.
Surrodar, yes.
Surrodar.
That's actually, that's kind of, I kind of have to explore that a bit.
Yes.
Trademark that, Jamie.
Trademark it. Get the URL. Yeah. They really are great, great people.
You know what is interesting? We just learned from a previous guest who's also a therapist that the screening for surrogates and gestational carriers is very intense.
Yes.
And the screening for sperm donors, not so much. It's recently getting more thorough.
Mm-hmm. That is absolutely true.
We're all shaking our heads.
Egg donors and surrogates. Well, so take surrogates off the table for a moment because they're not in the same category with egg donor and sperm donor, but egg donor and sperm donor, you would think would be exactly the same because they're both donating gametes that are going to result in a live birth. It is so different. And even not just the screening, but if you go to choose a sperm donor, even when I chose my sperm donor my donor, I actually met him because when we were trying to get pregnant for the third baby, Mr. Black Market Sperm Bank guy had retired, but he put us in touch with the donor. I'm telling you, it was really fishy. Like, don't do what I did.
Yeah.
But we met him and it was great. But when we chose him, we had like a paragraph, no picture, no video, nothing. Yeah. Egg donors, you get a video, you can Skype with them. You know, I mean, it's a really totally different field.
Yeah.
And even now. And I think very few banks do psych testing. I mean,
yeah,
they are starting to.
They're starting to, for sure. But not all banks are doing it.
Yeah.
Sperm banks.
Yeah.
It has always been that way for egg donors.
All egg donors are screened.
So interesting.
For how much money they charge, they should be like going to their house and checking up on them at night.
Are they clean? Do they clean their house?
Do they clean their room? Are they grounded?
No, you know what we also just learned from a listener? There are no gay sperm donors.
Correct.
What is that about?
Gay men, well, I mean, you can be a gay man and you can donate sperm to a friend as a, like, here's my sperm, I'm going to be the co-parent or whatever. Sperm banks and blood banks cannot accept gay men.
Yeah, I was just
going
to say, it's like giving blood.
It's still a stigma, still taboo.
Very discriminatory.
Yeah, because they're the ones that get...
It's an FDA... thing. I mean,
it's like something that just hasn't been addressed to be changed yet.
It hasn't been updated it hasn't kept up with the science.
We just found out, I mean, I don't want to tell like the whole story, but we just found out one of our kids' donors through a Facebook group, someone swabbed their kid's cheek and told everyone in the group. And I'm still processing that.
Someone swapped their kid and told everyone who the donor is?
Yes.
Oh, and you didn't
found the donor.
We didn't know. And So there's like 8 or 18 families in there in this group. It's a secret group, whatever. And it's of my second kid.
Yeah.
And then she told everyone. And we didn't have a chance to say yes or no. And, and it was like, and all of a sudden there's this picture of this person. And I thought I had a decade before I was going to know this. And, and my son hasn't generated any questions about it. And so we kind of said, we don't. Because they were like, do you want him to join the group? And I was like, no, I don't, because we're not ready for that. And there might be other people who aren't ready for it, whatever. And they started another group and added him in. But my whole point of saying all this is one of the things that we did find out about him is that he's gay. Because the girl who posted this went to college with the guy and knew him from some classes.
So accidentally
swabbed him, and they had gone, like, he lives in California or he lives like West Coast, and she lived here, and they had gone to college in the Midwest.
Well, we do.
I mean, what are the chances of that?
I will tell you.
But we did find out he was gay.
That That's cool. He probably just, he didn't tell the sperm bank.
Yeah. So some of your donors might be gay.
He definitely did not tell the sperm bank he was gay because they wouldn't have taken him. But it's very interesting because now, you know, we tell egg donors, and the same is true for sperm donors, there's no such thing as anonymity. And maybe there shouldn't be, you know, like, I think that it is really, we've been very focused on parents. You know, if you think about it, Growing Generations is in our 23rd year. So that means like our oldest kids are 21, 22, 23. So we were focused on people who were so desperate to be parents and really wanted to be parents. And now we're really focusing on, okay, there's this whole generation of people mm-hmm. and they have an opinion and their opinion's important. And we want to hear what they have to say. And we want the information. And between, you know, 23andMe, Ancestry.com, Facebook, facial recognition, just the internet in general, there's really no such thing as anonymity anymore. And many people think there shouldn't be. And
I think we chose an open donor because we mm-hmm. wanted that option, but I wanted to let my kid make that choice. Yeah. And we're in the Facebook group for the same reason.
Right.
But I wasn't ready for it in that moment. And I just wish there had been like a, do you want to know?
Of course.
Because it's like, all of a sudden I'm seeing an adult picture and I was just like.
Well, and also that information does belong to your child. You know, that's the important thing that I think people, you know, as I talk about in the book, the truth is so important. Honesty. Yes. People want to know. They have a right to know. They need to know. Identity is really, really important. And if you know from the beginning that you're conceived through the use of a donor or a surrogate or whatever method, you might have some feelings about it, but they will grow with you and they'll just be your background story. And we know from research on adoption that, you know, kids who know the truth from the earliest age do the best. Yeah. It's the same with third party. You know, with gay couples, of course, there's no passing. So of course you did something. You know?
Yeah. But the babies don't necessarily know that you did something to make them until you tell them.
Well, until they go to daycare.
Yeah. But if you've already told them
before, you mean the kids she makes?
Yeah. No, any kids. I advise people to be telling the stories right from the beginning. Yeah. I mean, just like, you know, you talk to your infant all the time. Oh, your hands are so long. You're going to play the piano like Uncle Joe, you know, or you look at you with your blonde hair. They don't know what you're saying. They're babies. Yep. You know, it's like that Free to Be You and Me episode back from the 70s. Yes. The babies are, they don't know.
Yeah.
But you tell them so often and from the beginning, you know, narrative. Mommy and mama loved you and we had to have help from a donor. And so for my kids, like, you know, they were known to say stuff like, you know, when my daughter was 3 and we're at the grocery store, one of us with her, both our kids have beautiful green eyes, which our donor apparently had green eyes. We don't. And someone would say like, oh, you have beautiful green eyes like your daddy. And my 3-year-old would say, I don't have a daddy. I have a sperm donor, you know, and they thought nothing of it. Mm-hmm. So
my daughter's obsessed with like her getting her period now. She's 10 and there's like a couple girls in the fourth
grade. She will kill you for saying that on the show, you know, by the way, I'm just going to say.
You know what we shouldn't say.
She did just start Googling me. But so she said last night, she goes, she was asking, I had said like, you know, the timing of it seems to be hereditary and like my niece just got hers and that's correlates with her mom. And she said, you know, we don't know about the donor yet. She goes, but you 8th grade. So like, let's hope it's you. And it's like, that's just her conversation now is the donor is just like, she's like, we don't know about the donor, but like, and she brings that stuff up and it's because we've been talking about it.
My younger daughter was more interested and she actually did the DNA testing and found him, which we already knew who he was. So we could have told her, but she didn't ask us, you know, I mean, she did, but she didn't. Yeah. And I'm totally cool with that. My older daughter is like, I don't want to know. Don't tell me. And said to her sister, like, I really don't want to be part of this. I don't have an interest in him, but you know, it's their story. And I think if you can have the ability to meet at some point because you want to, it's really the best scenario. And most of our egg donors are willing to meet. And if they don't offer that themselves, often parents will ask, can you ask them if they'd be willing? And the donors are almost always willing.
Yeah.
And if they're not, and if they have a really strong reaction, like, no, I would never, we say, you know what? You should not be a donor.
Right.
It's not a good choice for
you. Or this family's not the right fit for
you. No, actually it's not a good choice at all.
Not even good.
Yeah. Because you have to be able to cope with 20 years from now, someone is going to know, they're going to find you. They might imagine that they're knocking on your door and saying, hey, I think you were my egg donor.
Yeah, like, you say no.
If you can't be with that, you don't have to think that's the best thing in the world, but if you can't be some version of, that'll be okay, a little weird, but okay, then you should not be a donor because it might happen. It very well should happen. And you have to be prepared for that. So in the screening process, if a donor is like, I want to be completely anonymous, I never want my identity known, we won't move forward with them as a donor. Yeah. It's not fair to them because we won't be able to protect them. We can't promise
there's
them
no
that
anonymity.
They'd never be found.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. It's interesting. My, you know, my daughter doesn't show any interest. She's five, but even still, she is not interested in the story. She is not interested in hearing about a donor. She's like, okay, you know, like she suffers through the story when we try to explain, like when we try, you know, so how much is too, like, I don't want to like shove it down her throat.
I don't think you need to. I think you should let her be the guide. You've told her, you've introduced it. Let her be the guide. I will send you a copy of my children's book that's going to be out in about a month.
Love it.
Another
book.
Yes. Alert.
Ooh.
And it's called You Began as a Wish.
Oh, I love
it. So I will send you a copy and you can just put it on her bookshelf and see if she wants to look
at
it.
Lisa talked about that too. Just have the book in their room.
Every gay book. Yeah, we have every gay book. I'm going to make sure, but she has those flat bookshelves so you can see, but they're like stacked up behind me. Make sure that all the gay books are like in front.
There you go. But just follow her lead. You've introduced it. You haven't kept anything from her. Let her be the guide. I mean, some people are just not interested and some people are. And, you know, don't be afraid of the questions. Like when my daughter threw out while we're all watching TV, like, oh, I wish I had a dad, you know, and it's that question where it's like, oh, man, like we've been planning. And so, you know, my wife and I, we took a deep breath. We're like, okay, we've been planning for the, you know, this is the question we've been worried about. And
we're glad you said that.
Yeah. So we're like, okay, so what does that mean? And she's like, well, you'd play sports with me. And we were like, oh, all right. So it didn't mean any of the stuff that we were thinking, like, you know, that whole like bubble of we did something wrong. Yep. We messed up. Oh my God, you know, she found out. No. And then we were like, oh yeah, you're right. We're not really sporty lesbians. So like we could fix that because her friends all had dads who were sporty. Yeah. You know? Yeah. So it didn't mean what we were worried it would mean. It didn't mean she didn't love us or she wished we were different.
Any agency advice for, I'm looking for either an egg donor or a surrogate. Like, what's your advice to the LGBTQ community?
So just do your homework. Always ask your agency if you can talk to some parents that went through the agency and you know what,
how you know they're not fakes. Like fake referrals.
That's interesting. No one's ever said that to me.
I'm very skeptical. I can't imagine anybody would plant faith.
That would be a not reputable agent. What are you going to do? I mean, obviously I'm starting a not reputable agency tomorrow.
ask how many babies, you know, they should be following the ASRM guidelines. They should know all the main players. I mean, you know, but my global advice for anybody who wants to have a baby through third party assisted reduction is do it.
Just start.
You know, the problem is that we think we have to be like so ready. And of course, I'm not minimizing that it's expensive and that we do have to line up a lot of ducks to make it happen. But it really is doable now. And if you just do it and go for it, it's the most amazing thing. I mean, I don't have to tell either of you. Yeah. Parenthood it's the bomb. And it's not for everybody. So if you're not someone who wants to be a parent, that's totally cool too.
Probably not listening to this podcast.
Probably not. But if you are someone who wants to be a parent, then...
At least not this far into the podcast.
Right. Maybe they tuned in and then they're like, nah,
what?
No. But if you are someone who wants to be a parent and you need some extra help, just like go for it.
Yeah. Ball rolling.
Just do it. It does take a village, but there is a village out there for you.
Yeah. Sometimes that first step is just the hardest step, but there's help out there, which we've just learned. One more question.
Okay.
You're based in LA?
Well, I'm bi-coastal, so I have an office and an apartment here in New York, and I have a home and an office in LA.
Oh, okay. And are you guys...
we're all over. Half of our families live outside the U.S.
Oh, okay. People can call you and set
anywhere.
Up... And you work with everyone
everywhere. We work with anybody, anywhere, and we have parents everywhere.
Modern technology, folks.
Yeah. And if you want to learn the process of how to make your family...
You should read Your Future Family, The Essential Guide to Assisted Reproduction, written by our very own Kim Bergman, PhD.
And an intro by Dr. Mark, who was on season 2.
Yes. And you go back and listen to that
episode. Yeah, go back to listen to all of them if you missed them, for God's sake. Well, thank you so much for getting, like, this was so informative and just...
It was really fun. You guys are terrific. Thank you.
You're terrific.
Sometimes. That was great.
I love her.
I know.
She's good. She's beautiful.
You know, we never told her that, Jamie, we never told her that we're future authors. I didn't want to steal her sunshine.
No.
Sunshine? What do you thunder?
Thunder.
I was trying to make it more positive.
Was it thunder? Oh, you see my sunshine? I don't think it's steel.
It was.
See my sunshine?
No, it was steel.
Interesting.
Yeah. 1999-ish, Len was the name of that band. I loved that song.
I wouldn't know that.
Something like that, maybe,
Let's get back to Kim, because she's great. She was awesome.
I love that. We've only talked to a couple of gay men couples who've done surrogacy. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was really interesting to hear the holistic view of like they're almost like project managers taking you through the, I loved that.
And you need that.
Yeah.
It seems like you really do. I mean, we did talk to Lisa Schumann,
yeah,
who I like to call Lisa the therapist now, from now on in my life. We talked to Lisa the therapist, but it was kind of like a skimmed over thing. And so it was nice to get more in depth.
Well, hers was more that like one bullet point of the help you might need.
Right.
By the way, you got to go out and pick up Kim Bergman's book, Your Future Family, The Essential Guide to Assisted Reproduction.
It's so good.
Jamie like burned through it.
I really loved it. I learned so much and I thought I knew so much.
Yeah.
And it turns out I don't, but that's pretty much my life. So anywho.
Ditto. Okay, guys, 2 weeks for our live show. Not lonely. Or come to see Jess Kirsten.
It's not about us.
By the way, I just call her Jess. Like we're besties.
Well, duh.
Jess. We will be best friends with her. She doesn't know it yet.
We are finally going to be invited to somebody's house for dinner.
Damn it. Who's going to actually invite us?
I really thought we were going to be invited this season from someone, but we haven't.
I still believe in the gender reveal from Lara.
Do you?
And
I feel
Joanne.
Like it's past.
No, they haven't had the baby yet.
The gender reveal happens.
Oh, shit. Oh, damn it. We didn't get invited. No. All right. Okay. So it's 2 weeks to our live show. We want you to come June 10th at the Green Space.
Please come. And, you know, otherwise, you know, hit us up on the social. Mm-hmm. We're at ovariestalk@gmail.com. We're at ovariestalk on Twitter.
You got this.
We're at iftheseovariescouldtalk on Facebook. Yep. And we are at ovaries_talk on the Insta.
And we've been getting all of your emails. It takes us a while to respond, but we've been getting them. We're responding.
We're doing our best to respond. They're getting more and more, which we love. Yeah, we are, but it sometimes takes a second. Just be patient. We love you all.
We're so desperate and needy. Okay, we love you. Eggs. Ovaries therapy.
Ovaries.
What? Out.
Eggs. Ovaries. Out. What the heck?
Oh, no, we got it. It's out. If these ovaries could talk, they would say,
eggs, ovaries, out. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When you need to work quickly and confidently, you need Grammarly. It's a trusted AI writing partner that helps you get work done faster, with better writing. And it works where you work, across 500,000 apps and websites. 96% of users agree Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Grammarly. Easier said, done.